Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, Matt Snyder joins us now and talk a little all-star game with him from Cleveland. The home run derby was massive last night. We'll get his thoughts on that and tonight's game. Talking baseball with Matt Snyder from CBS Sports, Gwen and Chris program, All-Star Tuesday, of course. Matt Snyder joins us from Cleveland. I don't know. I mean, if you like the Home Run Derby or not, it was kind of hard not to enjoy at least some of that last night. What was your take on it, Matt?
Oh, I thought it was amazing. I thought it was the best derby of all time. I mean, the other ones I thought about were like when Josh Hamilton at 28 in the first round, but yeah. I don't really remember anything else about that, and he didn't even win. 2015 I thought was excellent because it was the first year with this format, and I feel like this format breathed new life into it. It had gotten to the point that I know it's cool to see the guys hit moonshots, but I had just started to get bored with it because guys would take 7-8 pitches in between swings and just stand up there, and it just felt like it took forever and there was too much dead time. Now they've got to get up there and swing. They've got a clock. We had Vlad set the record, tie his own record, and Jock ties him in the triple tiebreaker. And then I kind of tweeted out, I don't know how much you guys follow wrestling, but I was like, that Alonzo Acuna match, it felt like a cool down in like wrestling. You know, they had a huge event, and then before the main event, they give everybody a chance to go to the bathroom and get drinks and stuff so they have a match not that many people care about. But then Alonzo walked off with a buzzer beater. Just the final, Vlad shattering the all-time record by 30 at 91. The previous record in the single derby was 61. I also think you'll get a lot of casual fans who hardly ever watch baseball will tune in for that event.
Yeah.
I bet you there's a number's definitely higher than zero, the number of people that tuned in and thought, wow, I didn't know Vladimir Guerrero's son played, and then got to see that kind of show. Then you also get to showcase Pete Alonso and Ronald Acuna Jr., both with deep runs. It was a nice showcase for how much young talent baseball has, and it was dramatic. It was great.
Yeah, Matt, one of the things I think that has changed Home Run Derby is the fact they put that clock on, and now guys can't actually watch to see where the ball lands, right? It's you got to get these swings off depending on how many you need, and it has brought a different type of intrigue to Home Run Derby. One of the other things, though, that happens at the All-Star weekend is really people get a mic shoved in their face. And the big topic over these last few days has been the baseball. We had Justin Verlander come out and basically clear just outright say they have changed the baseball. We then had the Players Association leadership and Tony Clark come out and confirm, not knowing what's been done, but saying there's definitely something done. And then you had Rob Manfred come out and tell us that we're all losing our minds and that there's nothing going on with the baseball. What is going on right now? Where you come down on this?
I mean, I'm going to trust somebody like Justin Verlander, who's a master of his craft, and he holds a baseball for a living. He throws it, but he holds it. He knows what they feel like. Noticeable change. Home runs started spiking about midway through 2015, and the players have all said so. And there's been like a scientific study by somebody independent, and they've basically found there's less drag on the ball. So, of course, it's going to carry more. The biggest telltale sign to me is minor league baseball has been using different balls for years. Yes. This year they put AAA on the major league balls, and it shattered the home run record for April and May. So, I mean, the proof's all right there. So, obviously, they did something. I wonder if it's to counteract how good the pitchers are these days. I mean, it seems like they roll guys off of an assembly line who throw high 90s. Nowadays, and they've got sick breaking. So, I mean, Noah Syndergaard throws 100 with like a 92 mile per hour slider, and the ERA's in the fours. I mean, come on. So, I don't know if there are solutions, but I know a lot of people are getting to the point where they say there are too many home runs. I never thought we would say that. I don't know how you solve it. Maybe you lower the mound and go back to the old balls, and then maybe we'll get a lot more balls in play. Because the one thing I would worry about is the three true outcomes.
Right.
Strikeouts, walks, and home runs are the overwhelming majority of the plays. We don't have nearly as many doubles or triples or diving plays in the gap or great plays on the infield. We still have that stuff, but not as much. It's going more and more towards walks, strikeouts, and home runs. So, you know, more balls in play would probably make for a more exciting product. But right now, though, honestly, I don't dislike the product either, though. Right. I still love the game, and I think it's been an exciting season.
I think chicks still dig the long ball, so it works
absolutely.
Out.
But
it works
we can out. Cut down the strikeout because Crash Davis pulled us right after that.
Exactly.
That is the key. Matt Snyder joining us from CBSSports.com on the SDCCU fan hotline. It's interesting, Alex Bregman was also, they interviewed him, and he talked about batting average. If he wanted to hit 300, he could do it. But it's not on the minds of any of the players now to try and even hit 300. It's all about OPS and producing runs. So that is another thing that's changed in the way the hitting approach is. Do you think that's good for the game?
Yeah, I mean, power, the mindset that slugging is more important than average to me is absolutely true. I mean, you can still there, but I mean, I go back and forth. Like, I feel like someone like Adam Dunn was kind of underappreciated early in his career because he walked a lot and he hit for a ton of power, but he had a low average and high strikeouts. But I don't feel like you can win with a lineup of just all Adam Dunn.
Exactly.
I feel like there need to be some table setters. You need to mix in Ichiro's or, hey, Tony Gwynn. I mean, there's plays, Wade Boggs. I still think there are places for guys like that. And I like kind of a mix in offense. If you have, like I said, all Adam Dunn's, man, you're going to go through some ups and downs. There's going to be games where you feel like you can't do anything at all. And then there's going to be games where you score 8 runs. But there's not going to be much consistency to me.
Matt, you hit it right on the head, because I had a conversation with Don Mattingly about that very same thing. And he said there's nothing wrong with those guys, but you can't have a lineup full of them. You can't have more than really 2 or 3 of them, because your lineup becomes easy to kind of navigate for pitchers at this level. So I think you hit it right on the head. I want to ask you a little bit about tonight's game. Obviously, All-Star game is going on tonight. What do you think the storyline ends up being after this game tonight?
Oh, man. It's so hard to tell. I always try to lean toward the hometown guys. Like, Francisco Lindor is not starting, so he'll come in maybe midway through, maybe toward the end of the game. Maybe he comes up with a clutch hit and wins MVP in front of the home crowd. Something like that would be pretty cool. So, I feel like being here in person, it's about the home guys. Now, watching on TV, that's a little different. But, I mean, I always want to see Trout. Maybe he'll win a third All-Star game MVP. Christian Yelich, what he's been since last All-Star break, he's got to be kind of in the spotlight. Cody Bellinger, what he's been to this point this year, he's got to be kind of in the spotlight. And I'm always going to go back to my guy, Javier Baez. Throwing him on the left side of the infield with Nolan Arenado. I actually asked Arenado yesterday, do you guys have anything up your sleeve? And he said, maybe we'll figure something out, kind of flipping the balls to each other on a play. So that'll be interesting to see if they do come up with something.
Matt Snyder's with us, CBSSports.com on the SDCCU fan hotline in Cleveland for the All-Star game. We just want to ask real quick about the Padres and the Futures game. And obviously, I mean, there's a lot of people in San Diego disappointed. They thought, you know, a young player like a Franmil Reyes would have been perfect for the home run derby. Fernando Tatis Jr. maybe could have been in the All-Star game. But we're calming everybody down here because we're so excited about the future in San Diego. And the young players, they're eventually going to get their due. How much attention are these young guys starting to get around baseball? And then the Futures game, again, it was Padres, 3 pitchers all did really well.
Yeah, Mackenzie Gore, man, he's going to be something. I think that everybody's kind of looking at them and saying they're just kind of, this is probably the year before the year, but we better get them now because they're going to be really, really good. Yeah. Going to have to continue to develop pitching, and we know that can be volatile at this level. It's gotten to the point now nationally that I think most media, most players, most diehard baseball fans think that Fernando Tatis is already challenging Javier Baez for the most electric player in baseball title. And generally speaking, there's a pretty good consensus that while Vlad is really, really fun and he's an excellent hitter, Tatis is right now and is going to continue to be a better all-around player.
Yeah.
And I think he would be here if it wasn't for that injury. And of course, Machado, you knew he was going to get disgustingly hot. He just did it too late. but you could, you could make a case that both Tatis and Machado could be here right now, and I really thought they dropped the ball on not having Franmil in the home run derby.
So do we.
Yeah. Couldn't have said it any better ourselves.
Yeah. I don't know who would have won the home run derby, but it sure would have still been fun to have Franmil in there. Hey, Matt, have a great time in Cleveland. Thanks so much for joining us, talking a little baseball at the midway point. We'll catch up to you a little later in the season.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
Thanks,
Matt.
Thank you,
sir.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We'll talk a little basketball with Tony's buddy Chris McGee, Spectrum Sports LA. The Lakers, can they keep up with the Clippers? Talking some NBA basketball, Los Angeles Lakers, and from Spectrum Sportsnet LA, one of our favorites, Chris McGee, joins us here on Gwynn and Chris on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Chris, how are things? Finally settling things down a little bit after a crazy week or so.
Yes, things are great. I have my daughter and her friends here, and we got the day off, and we're just having a party here during the day, you know?
Yeah, I bet there wasn't a party Friday night though in Lakerland, and I'm not. Because of total disappointment, but obviously there had to be some thinking that Kawhi Leonard was going to choose the Lakers, but there was no thinking, right, that he was going to choose the Clippers and go cross town.
Well, it's funny you said it that way because it was kind of crazy, and it was Friday right before I went to bed. Unfortunately, I saw the Woj bomb, and that cost me about 2.5 hours, 3 hours of sleep. When you get in the rabbit hole. You know what's interesting, guys? Honestly, for a year, we all knew he was going to the Clippers. It was 100%. Yeah. And then you get duped. You start to read things and you start to hear things, and all of a sudden the Lakers are in play. And even though I kept saying he's not coming, you started to go, man, but it makes sense. Like, play with AD for the rest of your career. Load management. You have other stars with you. Like, it started to make a lot of sense to me, and you can convince yourself it's going to happen. And, well, but what about Toronto? But I knew the Clippers. It was just funny because all we heard all year, I mean, even during the season, was he's going to the Clippers. So it was like a foregone conclusion. And then you get so wrapped up for 7 straight days, like we're around the clock, ready to go on air. You know, you're just looking at Twitter the whole time. You kind of drove yourself crazy talking about it with every friend, people you see, you know, at the beach or whatever. So it was really crazy. It's funny the way you put it, because like it did hit me Friday night. It was like, oh my God, wait, Paul George? Like, that was the part that killed me, right? It was like, wait, Paul George is going to the hated Clippers? So then I went down the rabbit hole, and you know what? It was the next morning, I think I woke up and I was like, listen, it was always a stretch. Time to move on. You got AD. It's going to be awesome. So I kind of came around the next morning.
Geeter, what? So let's talk about the shift or the pivot that the Lakers had to make after Kawhi Leonard lets them know he's going to the Clippers. Rob Pelinka, who I felt like got a raw end of the deal when all of the scuttle happened with Magic, and all of a sudden Rob doesn't have any idea what he's doing up there. But he pivots really quickly. He makes some big signings, I think. He brings on Danny Green, who's going to be a capable defender and shooter. He brings on Avery Bradley, amongst some of the guys they had last year. What did you think about the pivot from Rob Pelinka making the moves to quickly fill this roster and really add some serious depth that I don't know if the Lakers seen in a while?
Yeah, Tony, I'm glad you used that word pivot. I think that's a great word to use. I might steal it for my own show. I think I think that is what happened, right? I mean, it's funny because we spent the better half of a month kind of getting ready for free agency, and Danny Green was at the top of our list. Now, that was before we thought Kawhi, we even had a chance. So we were spending the whole time debating on our shows, do you want to give the max slot to just one guy like a Kyrie or a Jimmy Butler, or do you want to spread it around? I was always under the spread it around camp. I said, yeah, I would give it to Kawhi or Clay, but nobody else. Danny Green is at the top of my list. Now, did they overpay for him at 32 years old? Maybe, but that cap space has to go somewhere. So for me to be able to land him immediately was great, and I think he hit it on the head. There's definitely depth. Now, listen, there's questions.
Yeah.
There's challenges that I have with this roster. We'll have to see how it meshes. But they are as deep as they've been in a long, long time. So that's the part for me that's going
to
be fun.
Yeah, Lakers got a lot of guys. Kawhi's going to the Clippers, but the Lakers got him, seemed like everybody else. Chris McGee is with us from Spectrum Sportsnet LA, covers the Lakers. How do you see the Laker lineup looking? I mean, I'm reading things that are causing me to double take, like LeBron James is going to start at point guard.
Yeah,
it's not that I don't believe that's possible. It just seems kind of weird when you've got Rondo on the club and some other guys. So it's early, and we don't know how it's all going to play out with Frank Vogel. But how do you see what they have now kind of meshing, and what kind of lineup do you see the Lakers going with right now?
Well, it's funny, Chris, on our shows, we have this lineup board, right? And we can, you know, you've seen it on ESPN probably too. It's like, you know, you mix and match and put guys everywhere. And we were doing it last night, and there's so many combinations. But a big part of what we did last night was, okay, so LeBron James is starting at point guard. Now, he's always kind of initiated the offense, but this is different if you start him at point guard and you start Boogie Cousins and AD. All of a sudden you start to look and say, okay, well, that means Kuz is coming off the bench, right? Because you can't have Kuz, LeBron, AD, and JaVale. It's impossible, because who's going to guard the guards? Danny Green's only one person. So you need to have another guard out there. So you start to think, okay, if LeBron's running the point, you got to have a KCP or Avery Bradley starting with Danny Green so they can guard CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard or Patrick Beverley and Lou Williams, right? Because it just doesn't make sense. So it is really interesting. I think if you were to go with, let's just say you go with LeBron, Danny Green, Boogie, AD, and let's say one of those other guards, all of a sudden your second unit looks pretty fun, right? Like Quinn Cook, maybe Rondo or Caruso, JaVale McGee, Kuz coming off the bench as that fifth man. It starts to look pretty fun. So I think there's a ton of combination. I think you also said an important thing that I'm going to keep saying on our shows is a lot's going to change, right? I mean, we haven't even seen how these guys work yet together. Who knows? Maybe a guy like Jared Dudley can play, you know, can come off the bench like he did in Brooklyn and give you 15 minutes and hit a couple threes a game. So it's going to be really interesting. To me, the biggest thing, guys, that I look and I say, not a lot of downhill guys, not a lot of ball handler type guys outside of LeBron, Caruso, Rondo, the point guard. So for me, I'm really interested to see how that mixes. I do like, because who's going to be running that pick and roll? I mean, you're just going to have one guy do it the whole time. You know, the problem, the thing with, like, when you have multiple guys that can handle the ball, you got different areas you can attack from and different guys that can run that pick and roll. But the flip side is, I do like our shooting and our spot up guys way more than last year. So it's going to be interesting to see how Vogel wants to play.
Yeah, this roster certainly looks like it's going to be a methodical type offense where they're not getting up and down.
It's different, right?
Yeah.
It's different.
That's different than we've seen, especially under Luke Walton, who liked to get the ball up and down. If the Lakers are to have success, and when I say success, we're talking top four seeds in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You're talking NBA title. Come on.
Yeah. But by the way, they have to be now, right, guys?
No.
Like, that's the expectation.
Right,
they got
a 2-year window with the guys that they have just signed. So they got at least those 2 years. Now, if the Lakers are to advance deep into the playoffs, aside from AD, LeBron, and Kuz, who I think you kind of know what you're going to get from those guys, who has to have the big year?
I am so intrigued by Boogie Cousins. Yeah. I mean, I love it for the money. If that makes sense. Like, I love that you can just get them for a year at a cheap price and go low risk, high reward. I think I've been a little more excited the last 24 hours. I sent my buddy Bruce Frazier, everyone that calls him Q. He's one of the assistants up at the Warriors, right? He's a guy that's got the beard, good guy, sits behind Steve, and he's always working out Steph Curry. I would say he's the most famous fourth assistant in the world. But I told him, give me a quick Boogie, like, kind of scouting report. It was really interesting. He was like, listen, he's a great guy. He's moody, just like a lot of basketball players, but, like, he can play make, like, high IQ. He said some things that I was like, wow, I wasn't thinking along those lines. And he was like, it's a really good gamble. And he said he knows it, right? Like, he has to have a good leadership.
Right,
so
right,
him
right.
with, like, LeBron and AD, like, I'm starting to like it more than I think. Like, I had friends who were like, we got to get Boogie. And he wasn't really on my mind much, to be really honest with you guys. I was more thinking, like, well, what about Marcus Morris? You know, get another forward in there. But then when they got Boogie, I started to really grow on me. So he intrigues me the most. And to answer your question, you're right. Like, you know what you're getting from those guys. Kuz obviously has to shoot better from three, but Boogie, if Boogie has a year, and I don't mean before Achilles year, that's crazy. He's going like 25-13, right?
Yeah.
But if he has a good year.
Just what he was doing in Golden State before he got hurt again.
Yeah, right? Wasn't he 16-8 or something when he got
hurt? Pretty good. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you guys off. Did I?
Oh, am I still here?
Yeah, there you go. Sorry, you cut out for a second.
Yeah, he said the quad was really the thing that slowed him down in that playoffs, right? So it was interesting. So, man, if he's just like, 17-8, if he's just giving you those kind of like minutes and he's giving you boards and some defense and hitting three to be able to stretch the floor, then you're good, right? That's what I keep going back to. And I love Danny Green, guys. I think that's a big pick. You need to have those kind of guys to win, don't you?
Yeah.
No, yeah. Every team's got one.
In every sport. Every sport. I feel like you've got to have just those guys that can shoot 45% from three in a playoff or, like, defend a guy and, another wing and defend the Paul Georges of the world because, I just feel like that's what you need to really win. So it's going to be interesting, man.
Agreed. Chris McGee, Spectrum Sportsnet, LA. I just wanted to sneak one more question, and I know you got to roll, we got to roll. But Lakers versus Clippers, just popularity in Los Angeles. To me, they've always been on completely different levels. Lakers way
not
up here,
close,
Clippers way down there. Is it still that way now that the Clippers have done this? Are the Lakers going to be fighting to maintain their superiority among the populace?
Well, I mean, you're never, ever going to, even if they win, they're never going to be more popular. It's just not, I don't know. And if you grew up here, then it's just like literally growing up, I did not know one Clipper fan. Now, that doesn't mean they're not going to have those fans come out of the woodwork.
He's right.
Jump on board. Yeah, for sure. Like, they're going to have fans. It's just never going to be, like, that battle's going to be more, year to year and battling to see who's the better team. But in terms of like the fan base, just too crazy. It's too crazy. But man, they made a good move. I gotta give them credit. Yeah.
Good for
Jerry
them.
West
They're definitely
again.
Gonna be battling.
Yeah, Jerry West, man. That guy, you've got to watch out when Jerry West is involved. I think
you know what's funny too? Give like Lawrence Frank, Winger, that whole staff, man, those guys deserve credit. Obviously Jerry's there, but like those guys pulled off a miracle, and Kawhi orchestrated it. You gotta tip your hat. You really do. They got a really good team. And by the way, guys, this is the first interview I've done since the season ended, so it's good to be back.
Oh, good to have you back, Ian.
Great to have you back, and we'll definitely have you on before the Lakers play the Clippers in the Western Finals next year.
It's like I had one final rose, and I decided to give it to you guys. It's a great moment.
Thank you, Chris. Thank
we
you.
Appreciate it, Chris.
Have a great rest of your
day
off.
Anything for you guys. All right.
Appreciate
it. Later, homie.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It's now time for the most unpredictable, most wacky, most opinionated set of the show.
I wouldn't brag about it.
Gwen and Chris talk about the best of the rest.
Great balls of fire.
Ooh, with a twist.
Personally, I think we got hosed on that call.
The Big Five begins right now.
Don't panic, but there's absolutely nothing to worry about.
On 97.3 The Fan.
Big Five is brought to you by EcoWater Water Systems. EcoWater Water Systems provide crystal clear, really, 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 really clean water for your home or business. Find them at EcoWater. That's ECOWaterSD.com. Before we get into it, I just want to let everybody know, if you're a big John Daly fan, he had to drop out of the Open Championship because they would not allow him a golf cart. So he said he can't play. Thank you, Thomas. Comments over there?
None.
Okay, let's go to number five.
Yeah, we've discussed that subject for about 20 years now.
Well,
number five.
20 years. That's
that wasn't
time.
That when the kid...
that was Casey
Martin,
I believe,
that was
way
like
back 20
years ago.
Okay.
They wouldn't let him use a cart.
Poor John Daly, though. He's a winner. They give every winner a lifetime entrance to the event.
Evidently, if you can't walk, you can't be entered.
Yeah, that's weird. All right. The Thunder's Russell Westbrook is probably feeling alone again after Paul George was traded to the Clippers last week in the wake of Kawhi Leonard choosing the Clippers as his new team. Now, there are reports that Russell Westbrook is open to being traded, and he may be on the move. Here's our boy Woj talking about what team may be interested in him.
One team that has interest, I'm told, in Westbrook, and the interest is mutual, are the Miami Heat. But having interest in a possible deal and being able to execute it are still going to be two, you know, very different things.
So there's just one team. I saw the Timberwolves was another place that they thought that he could
Detroit
be.
Detroit was
Detroit,
another
Detroit, yes. So, Chris, Spurs. Where do you think the best fit would be for Russell Westbrook?
Bulls.
Yes, really? Yes. We need a player. Somebody. Anyone.
A player.
One star player. No, obviously that's not in the cards, so it's not going to happen. I think the Heat is interesting. But we talked about this a little bit yesterday. The Heat just picked up Jimmy Butler, so that would give them a great backcourt. But if he goes to Detroit, he's got a frontcourt running mate in Blake Griffin. So, but I think Tony and I both mentioned this yesterday. I think he's got to go to the East. That's the key. Go East if you're Russell Westbrook, because there are really no star players in the East. And he could maybe get himself to an NBA Finals if he picks the right team to go to, I think.
Tony, what do you think?
I agree for the most part with Chris. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. I think Detroit is the place to go in the East, give you a front court mate, as Chris said, with Blake Griffin. But if he's going to stay in the West, I kind of like the T-Wolves. I think they played better when they had somebody lighting a fire under their behind like Jimmy Butler did. And I'm certain Russell Westbrook is not going to stand for ridiculousness in practice, and he's going to push those guys. So I think it would be less of a workload he'd have to take on, too. I mean, you got two guys in Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns, that can play and can get buckets. So I think for the...
They can't do anything else, but they can score.
Right.
They don't want to do anything else.
In terms of best fit and the longevity of his career... I think the best fit is in Detroit, but if he's going to stay in the Western Conference, I think the best fit is Minnesota.
If Tom Thibodeau can't get you to play, you know, defense, then there's very few coaches that can.
Touche.
I would say.
All right, let's move to number four.
Number four.
The Browns organization, actually, Thomas sent me this over the weekend, and I knew that Chris would love this. He would love it. Because the Browns organization is feeling pretty good about themselves and seem to be trying to set a tone with some of their billboards in the Cleveland area. A billboard popped up saying, quote, "If we were soft, we would be called Cincinnati."
Wow!
That's just, yeah.
Shots fired.
That's what they put up. That's the Cleveland Browns putting that up.
Woo! That's hot lava fire right there.
If you don't know, the Browns and Bengals have had an in-state rivalry for a very long time, and fans like to talk trash to each other. But the internet is quick to remind the Browns they have been the laughingstock of the NFL for quite some time.
Slow your roll, Cleveland. Yes. Slow your roll.
I wanted to go back and put some perspective. They have one winning season since 2003, and they went 1-31 during the 2017 and 2018 seasons. Last year, they were better and won 7 games, but some think they should pump the brakes on the billboards. Tony, why do you think the Browns suddenly have this attitude?
Well, because they got a young kid in Baker Mayfield who could throw the football around, had a good rookie season. You went out and made a trade for Odell Beckham to add to your squad. And then you based that, all of that, in the fact of they were able to actually win. How many games? 6 last year?
7.
7 games last year after winning how many the year before?
1 the previous
1 in 2 years.
So there's, I can see where there's a little bit of confidence, but I don't know if I want to go poking at the other team that actually has had more success than you in the past, I don't know, what, 10? Can we go longer than 10? Bengals?
I don't think they've had more success. That's the problem.
They've been to the playoffs more recently.
No, they have not.
Regularly.
No, they have not. Definitely. The Bengals are the longest team without a playoff berth right now.
No, playoff win.
What are you talking
playoff
about?
Win.
That is not right.
Playoff win.
Playoff win?
Yes, playoff win.
Wait, who's the longest without a playoff berth?
Ooh, I don't know, but the
it was the Bills up until last season.
2 years ago, yeah.
But wait a minute. Cleveland has not... The Bengals haven't been better than Cleveland in the last 10?
Not a lot. Well, they had a couple of little runs. Didn't they? They got into the playoffs in the mid-2000s.
Dalton's got them there once, right?
He's got them there a couple times.
They lost to the Chargers in 14.
Yeah, a couple years ago. But the Bengals haven't won a playoff game since 1988.
Correct.
So they're the longest without a playoff win. That's what I meant. I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem.
I'm just saying, based off of those two in the last 10 years, I don't know if I would go poking at Cincinnati because you guys literally took 2 years to win one game. That puts you behind the eight ball, yes, as far as I'm concerned.
I totally get it, but I'm going to surprise you here. I think this is fair, and I'll tell you why. Because when the Cincinnati Bengals came into being in 1970,
school me,
or 68, school me, 69, their coach was a guy by the name of Paul Brown. Now, Paul Brown basically founded the Cleveland Browns, brought them along as one of the great coaches of all time, then had a bad breakup at the very end. Mm-hmm. The Cincinnati Bengals started up, and Paul Brown took over the Cincinnati Bengals. To throw some flavor back at his old team, the Cleveland Browns, he designed the Cincinnati Bengals uniforms to be identical to those of the Cleveland Browns. So the Browns ran out for opening day and played the Bengals, and it was like they were playing themselves. So Paul Brown stuck it to the Cleveland Browns the minute the Bengals were a franchise.
So he owed a little bit.
So I think that it's just been a good, healthy rivalry over the years. They really, you know, kind of get after each other, and I just think this is funny.
See, I didn't know that. I didn't know any of that side piece. It does kind of make it a little more funny.
The Bengals and Browns have been at each other's throats since day one, basically.
Okay. All right.
So I think it's kind of fun.
See, I always know when Scraby has a little bias into something. Clearly, he's lived in Cincinnati or something before.
I did.
Because he's feeling some type of way about your answer.
I'm a little
right
mad
now.
Because Cleveland is a gross, disgusting place.
I actually like Cleveland. When we went there a couple years ago to Padres, I was actually surprised how nice it was.
Cleveland
wasn't bad at all.
It's on TV right now.
Looks nice out there today. Yeah,
it's hot. It's muggy. The river caught on fire.
It's not hot. Wait, time out. It's not hot and muggy in Cincinnati?
It's less hot and muggy.
I believe the river caught on fire in like 1764. So you're going back like 300 years.
Wait, time out.
I wasn't there that day, Thomas.
Time out. The what?
The river, the Cuyahoga River, which runs through Cleveland, there had so much trash in it.
Okay,
like 100 years ago, that it actually caught fire.
They have a beer called Burning River, I believe.
So Cleveland has always tried to live that down.
They have a beer called Burning River.
Yeah, Cleveland beer.
That's brilliant.
Number three.
Former Major League Baseball Commissioner Bud Selig released a book today, and in that book, he ripped Barry Bonds. He said, quote, "The summer of 2007 was unpleasant for me. When I look back, that's putting it mildly. It was one of the few times in my life I wasn't excited about going to ballparks. And if you know me, that's all you need to know." He was talking about Barry Bonds chasing Hank Aaron's home run record. He said he couldn't stand watching Bonds become the new home run king, and he wasn't likable compared to Hank Aaron, so he knew that he had to be on hand for the record breaker, but his fantasy was that he would be in Cooperstown for, actually, Tony's dad's Hall of Fame induction with Cal Ripken in 2007. Didn't work out, but not nice words for Mr. Bonds from the old commish. Chris, what purpose does it serve to say this about Barry Bonds?
I just wanted to go back to the very beginning of what you said, that Barry Bonds made life a little miserable for Bud Selig in 2007, was it?
Well, these are his words, Bud Selig.
Right, Bud Selig. Well, I'd just like to say to Bud Selig, if he's listening.
Let him know, Chris.
And I hope he is.
I know.
While you were commissioner, you made my life as a baseball fan miserable the entire time. I thought he was the worst commissioner I've ever seen in any sport. It makes me mad to a certain extent that the Padres gave in and named a little area after Bud Selig as part of Petco Park over there, right? To try to kind of make sure we got the All-Star game. A little bit of, you know, politics there. I just really despised Bud Selig. I didn't like anything about him. He takes credit for all of these things, like the wild card and interleague play. These are all things that everybody else had ideas about way before Bud Selig ever came along. And I think the game took about 500 steps backwards under his tenureship. So I don't really care if Barry Bonds made him mad.
Tony?
Wow, I didn't know you were going there. I thought you were going someplace else.
Oh.
I knew the part about the All-Star game was coming from
there. Yeah.
The question is, what purpose does this serve? It serves him to sell more books is what the purpose of him putting
good
that
point
in there.
Good point.
I don't necessarily like it because he was mum the whole time with Barry Bonds was going through whatever he was going through. He had nothing to say about it, as a matter of fact. So I find it a little funny that need to sell a book, and now we're getting your true feelings about Barry Bonds. On the other hand, I actually thought Bud Selig did a decent job as a...
You did?
I did.
All right. Well, you also played for the Brewers.
I played for the Brewers.
That gives you a little connection.
But most of the things that he did, that I think he did well on, happened long before I was even in the big leagues. Interleague play, I think, was a tremendous
idea.
No,
I'm saying he takes all the credit for all of that, and I'm just saying that...
Well, these guys, the brilliant people who had the idea before didn't actually
put it in.
So they can't get credit for it.
All right.
He did that. He was able, whether it was enhanced or not, when the game was in a very, very bad place after that 94 strike, he was the commissioner when they got it back on board.
He is also the commissioner when they went out on strike.
Touche.
So...
Realize you already had your chance to knock Bud, all right? So I'm trying to get some positivity here on
Bud.
But listen, Chris isn't the only person that feels like this. I know a lot of people who feel the same way about Bud. Maybe I'm a little partial because I was a Brewer, but that's where I'm at.
Yeah, when I brought this up earlier, you surprised me by saying you were into it. So
yeah.
Number two.
The CBA for baseball is expiring in 2021, but that wasn't all. The MLBPA, actually, boss Tony Clark, talked about a ton of things today. He suggested that when it comes time to at the bargaining table, he's going to ask about totally eliminating the draft, citing that it inherently limits players' options. Commissioner Rob Manfred said that baseball is looking for a possibility of an international draft, said the draft is, quote, the best mechanism for entry into professional baseball. So, Tony, would you have more of an issue with keeping the draft, or would you be okay with eliminating the draft?
I'd be perfectly fine with eliminating it. Let me tell you, American amateurs have been getting jobs for quite some time. Whereas guys who live in the Dominican, they live in Venezuela, they live in Japan, they can all sign as free agents. They don't enter a draft. But of course, the American players are forced to enter the draft. That is really the only way. Unless you take some wild steps that get you away from that, most of the time you have to enter the draft. And I wouldn't be mad at all to see the draft go away. It's not like the draft is like any of the other major sports. It's not like, I mean, they try to make it like that, but getting all excited about a player you've never seen before is just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So I like the idea of getting rid of it. I know the owners aren't going to like that. They're going to do an international because that would also save them money on the international side as well. So I wouldn't mind at all if the draft went away.
Chris, what do you think?
I think it would be such a shakeup that it would be hard for all of us to grasp it. You know, like every player just... whoever plays being a free agent. However, keep in mind that in every other line of work, everybody is a free agent. Nobody graduates from San Diego State as a, you know, with a degree in business and has to go work in Green Bay because somebody called them from Green Bay and says, you got to work here. So, you know, it is the fair thing to do, but it would be really hard to implement it. And I think it would be really difficult for us to grasp it all.
Now that you said that, although I still like the idea of no draft, it would be really difficult. Like, yeah. Just think, I mean, there's a whole lot of rounds in the draft.
Like 60, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot.
So it would be difficult, but as you said, the fair thing to do is to get rid of it.
And the only thing also is if you had everybody as a free agent, would not the Yankees and the Dodgers wind up with all the best players pretty much again?
You could do it like
which is what they're doing already.
You can do it like they do it international where everybody gets the same amount of money to spend on the pool, okay, and you divide it up as you see fit.
All right. That would be cool.
Number one.
Serena Williams is in the middle of trying to win another Wimbledon, but an essay came out today in Harper's Bazaar that lays out the emotional aftermath of her 2018 U.S. Open final. That match resulted in the first major title for then-20-year-old Naomi Osaka, but you may remember Serena kind of threw a fit and ruined her moment a little bit. So she wrote a letter that... she apologized and she said, this debacle ruined something that should have been amazing and historic. Not only was a game taken from me, but a defining triumphant moment was taken from another player, something she should remember as one of the happiest memories in her long and successful career. That was not her apology, what she said about it. So my question to you guys, Chris.
That's what she said after the game.
Yes.
I was about to say, that sounds familiar.
Yes, but she wrote a letter to her and Naomi accepted her apology. Chris, was this apology more for Serena or more for Naomi Osaka?
I think it was more for Serena.
I think so,
too. I think it was just time for her to get out of the guilt that she felt for not acting the best.
Ruining a moment.
She blew a gasket.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a problem with athletes once in a while getting a little frustrated and blowing a gasket. I mean, I think we've all been there if we've played enough games or, you know, been in enough contests. I mean, you just get ticked off for no reason or whatever reason. And I forgive Serena, but I don't know that Serena had forgiven Serena. Yeah. So I think that that's why this apology was made.
Tony?
Clearly she didn't. She had started seeing a therapist about this.
Couldn't get over it.
She couldn't get over it. So the letter was in actuality therapeutic for her. And so she said the tear is for Serena for sure.
Yes.
I think she explains in that letter that it was really the acceptance of the letter that allowed her to let it go finally. So good for Serena. Good for Naomi.
Yeah. The Big Five is brought to you by EcoWater Water Systems. Great tasting, crystal clear.
Look at that Crocodile Dundee hat.
Odor-free, virtually contaminant. That is a nice hat. Virtually contaminant-free water for drinking, bathing, and cooking. EcoWater Water Systems. That's really, 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 really clean water. Find them at EcoWater. That's ecowatersd.com.
Guaranteed Josh Bell is going to the same hat guy that Cam Newton's going to. Guaranteed.
Good call.
That's the exact same hat. All right, we got to go to break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
And today's subject is the greatest all-star game moments that we can remember.
It's now time for Gwen and Chris to rank their top five of the day.
Gonna grip and rip as usual.
But this isn't just a regular top five list.
I love it. It sounds sadistic, but I love it.
This is The Countdown. And it starts right now on 97.3 The Fan.
Okay. They've had 90 All-Star games now. Or this is the 90th.
This is the 90th, tonight. I believe.
So I've been alive for most of them.
I have not.
You're getting close.
I am.
You're getting
close to
the halfway point there.
I'm almost there.
Did you know, before we get to this, that for about 5 years, I believe it was late 50s and early 60s, that each year they played two All-Star games?
I only knew that because I think I was looking at Baseball Reference and I noticed some of the guys have like all stars twice,
right?
In their numbers, and I
yes, you could make it
research.
Both. You could make it twice in the same year. I don't remember why they did that. I don't know what the reasoning was. I'm gonna look that up while we're doing this segment. But yeah, they used to have two all star games. Now that would be interesting if you had another one in August, because then you would get a lot more genuine results of a player's season before you pick the team. But
yeah, the participation would be low. On the second one.
Do you think fans would tune in for a second home run derby in August?
I think the fans might tune in a smaller numbers, and the players, it'd be hard to find a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
Because come into the season, if your team isn't in it, all you are thinking about is doing nothing.
I can tell you for a fact that one prominent Padre told both Tony and I that he really wasn't all that upset that he wasn't going to be in the All-Star game this year.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
True story.
That's just because
it's
the rest is important.
It's
a
grind.
The rest is important.
Like these guys who are at the All-Star game, and don't get me wrong, 99% of them are super excited. Matter of fact, 100% of them are excited to be there.
Sure.
But if you would have said, hey, man, we gave you four days off that they're missing, they're wishing they had that.
Yeah.
Which is why they added the two more days at the end, because it didn't used to be like that.
Right, you used to get Wednesday off, and then there was games on Thursday.
Yeah.
But now they give you 2 days. The two All-Star games, by the way, just to finalize, that was 1959, 60, 61, and 62. So for 4 years, they did that. Anyway, I'll look up why they did that. But what we're doing now is counting down the top five All-Star game moments of all time. And away we go with...
Number five.
Hee-hee. I guess I'll go.
Okay.
1983, Fred Lynn, who I believe lives in San Diego, or Used to, anyway. Yeah. Hit the only Grand Slam in All-Star Game history. And it's still the only All-Star Game Grand Slam in history. It helped the American League beat the National League 13-3 at Comiskey Park in Chicago, and it snapped a then 11-game National League winning streak. Fred Lynn's Grand Slam, the number five moment for me.
All right. My number five moment, all these will have a little bit of a personal touch to it.
Yeah.
2001 All-Star Game in Seattle. My dad and Cal Ripken were honorary members of the All-Star Game. Cal Ripken would go deep in his All-Star, last All-Star appearance.
That was amazing, right?
First time I got to meet Jimmy Rollins, who was a rookie in his first season making an All-Star appearance. This was the day that Alex Rodriguez slid over from shortstop and forced Cal Ripken to play shortstop while he played third, kind of paying homage to Cal in his last season. I thought that was a pretty cool moment.
That whole thing was amazing. And then Ripken hits the home run to win the MVP. Sweet moment.
Yes.
Number four.
All right, number four for me was the very next year. Bud Selig's finest moment as a commissioner. Miller Park in Milwaukee. July 9th, 2002 was the unfortunate date of this occurrence. 11 innings, American League 7, National League 7. Probably one of the most embarrassing moments baseball's ever had, when they had to look over at each other and look at each other and go, well, we have no more pitching. What are we going to do? I see we can play another inning. No, we don't have any more pitching.
I don't
guess we're just going to have to call it right. I mean, but the look, do you remember the video of Bud Selig? It was like,
this cannot be happening.
A, it was, this cannot be happening. But B, it was, he had no clue what to do.
Yeah.
I mean, none whatsoever. No one had ever even thought about the potential.
It was all Bud could think about was his getting phone calls from owners like, you had my pitcher go out there another inning and throw.
Right.
He was hearing all these different thoughts in his head at the time.
He didn't know what to do. Joe Torre and Bob Brenly, I believe, were the managers of that game. Torre used all nine of his American League All-Star pitchers, and Brenly used all eight of his National Leaguers, and they called it a game. It was a very embarrassing moment for baseball.
My number four, ironically, not really ironically, but is also 2002.
But All-Star not for game. The same reason?
Not for the same reason.
Okay.
There's a couple different cool moments I thought in that game.
Okay.
Torrey Hunter robbing Barry Bonds of a home run, which would have taken the tie away.
Oh, and that was that the one where he picked him up?
Yep. Yeah. Put him over his shoulder like he was a little rag doll. By the way, Torrey Hunter's like 6'4"
right.
and some change with some weight. And the other moment was Curt Schilling. Was it Barry? I can't remember who it was, but he basically told him what was coming. Gave him the fastball sign. And he threw a fastball and struck him out. I think it was Barry Bonds in the same All-Star game.
Same game, huh?
Thought that was pretty cool.
I didn't remember that.
Number three.
All right, number three for me. 1994, we've talked about it already. It'll probably rank a little higher on your list.
Indeed it will.
Tony Gwynn Sr. scores the game-winning run on Moises Alou's double in the bottom of the 10th inning. In Pittsburgh, snapped a six-game American League win streak, 8-7. That was a wild, fun game. And Tony Gwynn Sr.'s enthusiasm will never be forgotten.
My number three was the 1999 All-Star Game. Couple different reasons. Ted Williams was honored before the game. My dad got to be one of the players that Ted personally asked for to be the one to carry him out.
Pretty sweet.
Or to support him out.
Yep.
And the other cool thing that happened was Pedro Martinez.
Struck out five of six of...
Like elite hitters.
Oh yeah,
and made it look relatively easy. So that was my
Fenway
moment
Park
for three.
Too
at Fenway
at
Park.
Fenway
That's
Park.
Right.
Yeah, that was a classic night.
Number two.
All right, number two for me is the 1970 All-Star Game. You remember it as the game that Pete Rose barreled over Ray Fosse to score the winning run from second base. Everyone's seen that clip, that highlight. But really, thinking about it, I mean, it was an exhibition game, and that's the way Pete Rose played. And broke Ray Fosse's shoulder on the play, scored the winning run. The National League scored three in the ninth to tie. Then in the 12th, Rose scored the winning run. The reason that game is so high on my list, it's honestly the first time as a kid that I can remember watching an entire baseball game and really just loving it. I think I wrote a paper about it for school a couple of days later. That game got me into baseball. An all-star game of all things, but I always remember that 1970 game. First game I ever remember watching.
Fossey's career was never the same after that.
Never
right?
the same. Ray Fossey became a very good announcer for the Oakland A's, but never a great player again, unfortunately, because of that play.
My number two is the 1989 All-Star Game in Anaheim. Bo Jackson steps on the scene. I remember this because I was in like the nosebleed seats in Anaheim.
Yeah.
And I watched this guy hit a ball on the black
tarp. He almost hit it to you. That's where how far he hit it.
I mean, dead center field. First time I got to see like a like super athlete on the baseball field. Like Bo was crazy, crazy talented. I remember walking by him after the game and he just had like muscles coming out of every place. It was unbelievable. Yeah,
he was an amazing athlete. I covered the Raiders when he was played for the Raiders, and he inspired awe.
He
just
did.
Coming
he
into
did.
A room. That was it. Everybody's dropped, stopped, all the rest of the players too. Oh my God, there's
no. That's how I every know. One of these all-stars felt when he walked into the
it
building.
It's just incredible.
Number one.
All right, number one for me is the 1971 All-Star Game. 70 and 71. But 1971 All-Star Game was in Detroit. And the reason that this one's memorable was that there were six home runs hit in this game. The American League won 6-4. Listen to the names of the six guys who hit home runs. For the National League, Hank Aaron, Johnny Bench, and Roberto Clemente.
Those are all really good.
Not bad. For the American League, Harmon Killebrew, Frank Robinson, and off the light tower, Reggie Jackson.
Was that Detroit?
That was in Detroit, yeah, 1971. You can't have a more star-studded performance than those six guys all hitting a home run in the same game. And if you were had been there, you'd never forget that, right?
I just remember Reggie Jackson's pimp job was immaculate.
He hit that ball off Doc Ellis, and he looked at it for the entire way, and Kurt Gowdy calling it on NBC, one of the great announcers, and just saying, I think that went off the transformer up there. I mean, it was like out of the world that Reggie Jackson hit the ball.
Yeah, you definitely couldn't see it.
No. So far.
My number one, as Chris mentioned earlier, 1994 in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
After losing six straight to the American League, the National League came in with a sense of urgency. And we're able to pull it off. I remember this very well because right before the break, the Padres were playing the Montreal Expos, and Moises Alou was killing them. Killing the Padres. So they get to that extra inning, and my dad leads off with a single. He comes up. I'm like, I just watched this guy go like 8-for-13 in the series against the Padres. This dude can hit. Sure enough, missile into the gap. My dad comes home to score the winning run. National League briefly ends an American League run of wins in the All-Star game.
Yeah, and that's a great moment.
Pretty exciting moment for my pop.
Fred McGriff hit a two-run homer with two outs in the bottom of the ninth of that game to tie it up and
off
send
Lee
it to extra
Smith.
Innings. Yeah. I had some great All-Star moments. There hasn't really been any to that level yet tonight as they play on in Cleveland. We'll update you when we come back. There's
our countdown.
The countdown
is now closed.
All right, a little up.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.